The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
Oh, good God. It's finally time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. Chris, are you with me?
I am. And yes, you are hearing this on a different day this week. As I announced on the Facebook page, we have changed our release day. And there's a reason for that. There's actually a number of reasons for that. But from now on, Wednesdays will be the day.
So it'll be like your midweek remedy for, you know, it's rock and roll. You need it by Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Wednesday's a good day because God knows you know it and I know it too. Work can be hell sometimes,
yes,
man. And it's been hell on us lately. But, you know, Wednesday's a good day, I think. You really kind of need that. You know, I think Monday was good to kick off the week, but I think you really need it more by Wednesday. You need that push to get you over the proverbial hump.
That's your hump day rock show. And
there you go.
And, yeah, as I mentioned in the post on Facebook, you know, family stuff comes first, and, you know, wife's going back to college, and so, you know, papers are due. I can't put my wife's college behind the show.
Man. There's all kinds of crazy shit going on in our lives, but, you know, that's what the Chris and Aaron show's for, and that's on the VIP. So if you're a member of VIP, you're going to get the inside story of us moving to Wednesday, the inside story of us being dead-ass tired today, and all that good stuff. If you're in on that, we got a new Versus lined up for the VIPs and all that good stuff. If you're not in on the VIP stuff, check it out. This week, as you can tell, we're both kind of out of it. You know, it's just been one of them crazy, crazy weeks, and we know you guys experience them as well wherever you are. And so we don't even have the Geeks of the Week together.
No.
We don't have an iTunes review together. Do we know what HK Collectibles Inc. has got going on?
Yeah, our friend Daryl Albert at HK Collectibles Inc. has some pretty cool stuff that he's added recently, including a ticket from a Who show in Glasgow in 1976.
Oh, wow.
And this is cool. Led Zeppelin at the Seattle Kingdom in 1977.
How cool is that? Where else are you going to get shit like that? Wow.
It's pretty cool.
There's so
stuff.
Much cool stuff on there. If you go to Amazon through our link at decibelgeek.com, just take some time to check out all the stuff that Daryl's got there because, man, he's got a ton of it. Type in the name of your favorite band and you might even find the ticket to a show that you might have attended but lost the ticket to, you know, and then you could get it back, put it in a frame, hang it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation pieces right there. Rock and roll.
Absolutely.
I love it.
And yeah, we don't have Geeks of the Week this week or the iTunes review, but please, guys.
Please forgive us.
forgive us and please continue sharing and retweeting the show and leaving those iTunes reviews. I will be back with more of that stuff next week. It's just,
we'll get our shit together.
It's been the week from hell for me. So
I agree.
I will be
too.
Back in full force next week. But at least
our cycles are together, right?
Yes. Yeah, I know.
We spend so much time together, our lives together now. So,
yeah.
But there is one thing that keeps me hanging on. You know, this week has been hell for me. I know it's been hell for you too. But the one thing all week long that's kept me holding on to dear life, you know, and know that there's light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that the brand new Iron Maiden album, Book of Souls, comes out this week.
Yep.
And so we decided, you know, what better way to celebrate something so momentous as that than with a full-on Iron Maiden discography discussion.
Yeah.
And so we've got an expert on board.
Oh, yes, we do.
So I guess let's quit messing around and get right to it with our good friend and yours, Billy Hardaway, talking about Iron Maiden. Drop on us all. So today we wanted to take a look at some Iron Maiden history, and who better to teach us about Iron Maiden than, you know, and it's beautiful because we got an expert in-house, and it's Billy Hardaway. Billy, thanks for coming on the show with us, man.
I'm sorry, guys, but I thought we were doing Iron Butterfly. I brought my one Iron Butterfly EP.
The one that's got Inagata DeVita on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, just so, the one. So we're just going to talk
about
the
one. I made a mix CD, and I have it on there like 55 times, and it's like 60 minutes long.
I was going to say, you were expecting to talk for 15 minutes and be done.
But Since you do throw this Maiden thing at me, I'm good. I think I can remember all that stuff. I wasn't too high during the 80s.
Okay. Well, yeah. Awesome. And with Anthrax, I knew quite a bit about them. But with Judas, this is going to be similar to when we did Judas Priest. I am a fringe fan of Iron Maiden.
I had a couple albums
growing up. I never got deep into the... I was one of those Kiss fans where, like, Kiss was the whole world to me and then a handful of other bands. But Maiden just never was really on my radar, so I've gone through and I've been listening to their stuff lately, and I'm really into it. But we want to get some like cool stories and facts and stuff straight. And Billy is—he's our unofficial research person,
totally.
And he's our corrections department.
That's totally true.
We keep him very busy, and he knows a lot about Iron Maiden. So I just thought we would just go through the whole history of the band, like the studio albums. We're not going to go into live albums today, but. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, let's start with this. How'd you get into Iron Maiden initially?
Well, you know, I'm like 46 years old, so some of this stuff is a little hazy.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a little West Texas cow town, so it wasn't on the radio, I can guarantee you that.
Right.
No.
So probably one of my older friends probably was playing something off of Killers or maybe the first album somewhere, and I might have just heard it, but not really known what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember the first time I was in a record store, an actual record store,
right.
And I saw the Number of the Beast album cover.
Yeah.
And I was probably about 12, 13 years old, and it scared the shit out of me.
but you still wanted it, though.
But of course I wanted it. But then probably one of my older friends probably knew who they were because he was already listening to the two albums.
Right.
And so the thing about the first two is I really don't like Paul Di'Anno, but the reason for it is that I heard Bruce first.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time I was into singers. Like I was into Journey, you know, Paul Stanley,
high register,
good singers. My mom was a singer. So I was into like singing, and punk I hated. So anything towards like punk I hated. So, but I do like some of the songs off the first two albums, but I just prefer when Bruce heals them. But yeah, and I do remember even up until my 15, 16, 17 years old when they did start showing the Number of the Beast video on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
That video still creeped me out a little bit because of all the devils,
all
the devils swinging around. I mean, it did not give me nightmares and stuff, but I got involved in a little in the dark side stuff, and it kind of like freaked me out with the imagery and stuff. But
interesting. All right, so
awesome. I think I'm the same way. You know, the first Maiden I was ever introduced to was with Bruce Dickinson,
mm-hmm.
and so for a long time I didn't even know there ever was a different singer than Bruce. You know, and then when mm-hmm. I did finally go back and listen to them first couple albums, it didn't hit me the same way. And I got to think that most people probably have that same experience.
Right.
Yeah, I think it has to do with your age.
Yeah.
You know, if you were older and discovered Maiden on the first album, then yeah, you're gonna love that stuff.
Right.
And
I know
fans that are like that, but
yeah, and that's true for anybody. Yeah, it's usually when you were 12, it's typically whatever you're listening to when you were 12 is what tends to stick with you.
Sure.
But all right, so why don't we just start with the first album? This is Iron Maiden's self-titled album, released April 14th, 1980. I don't know, and produced by Will Malone, and I'm sure some people would say produced badly by Will Malone. I don't know. Let's get everyone's take on the first album.
Well, for one, I pride myself on having full collections of music, and honestly, I hate to say, but I do not own this album, and I never have.
You don't own it?
No. It's the only one I don't own on vinyl, CD, or anything.
I mean, there's some great songs on it. Charlotte the Harlot's awesome.
Yeah, there's some great songs.
Running Free.
Family Opera.
We played Iron Maiden a couple of weeks ago. That's a great song.
The fact that I can hear him on one of the live albums with Bruce is enough for me. I don't really think that that I would ever pull the CD out to listen to it.
Yeah, and didn't they record new versions of some of these early songs with Bruce?
Yeah. I've all heard that for some B-sides and stuff.
There's some B-sides. There was like a best of B-sides that came out at one point there. And it might have been in that big Iron Maiden box, too, that came out in the 90s. That was like, I saw it one time at Phonolux and it was like $300.
But like, wow. It just surprises me for Maiden to be basically your favorite metal band that you wouldn't have some love for those first two records.
It's like I said, it's the vocalists. I mean,
but musically,
even musically, I guess maybe because I heard those songs live, because they're only on the live albums with Bruce. So even then, the music is different.
Yeah.
So, and I'm the kind of guy that it's very rare that I hear a live track that's not better than the studio track.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I mean, Live After Death is, to me, you know, one of the greatest live albums of all time.
And
you put that up against those live versions of like Wrathchild and stuff like that, up against Paul Di'Anno studio tracks.
Right.
And I just think you're fucking dillweed if you're going to say that Di'Anno's better.
Oh, I'm not saying he's not.
There's a reason why he's not Maiden singer. Well, right. He can't even get into the country.
He's not a better singer, but he had his own sound.
But
he was unique.
It was just too punk for me, and I just wasn't into all that
which
stuff.
Which I kind of like.
So do you,
the mix
like,
of punk with it.
Because we've kind of talked about this with like the Motley Crue 94 album, where that's kind of like a different band. Almost completely.
I skipped that too, though. I didn't even listen to that till y'all started talking about it.
Yeah.
I knew about it. I'd heard Hooligans Holiday, probably saw the video, but without Vince Neil, I really wasn't interested in Motley Crue.
Right.
And now, even with Vince Neil, I'm not interested in Motley Crue.
No, me neither. Yeah. But I don't know. If I was listening to Phantom of the Opera yesterday, that's a pretty epic song. I was tempted to play that on the epic episode.
Some of them might be, and I admit there's times where I might need to revisit them. It just all depends on the mood I'm in.
Right.
But this is one thing, though, with me, where if I put them on shuffle, you know, if I put them all on my iPod and hit shuffle, it's going to throw me for a loop if I hear a Di'Anno voice coming up when I've heard like five or six Bruce Dickinson songs. So there's things like that that I can't mix in.
That's the same way I am with Van Halen on my iPod.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I got to keep the Sammy Hagar and
separate from Roth.
Separate, yeah.
Not taking anything away from the eras, but you're right. I mean,
but to listen to it all together on a shuffle, you know, it goes from Dave to Sammy. It just doesn't roll right.
It's just not right.
Because it is like a different band.
So even on my iPod, I've got the first two Maiden albums under Paul Di'Anno on there, so I got it separate from
what I do with like Dio. Like I put a bunch of Rainbow and stuff on there, and I have like all eras of Rainbow, and then even the Black Sabbath, but to get the Dio stuff together, I changed it in iTunes and put it all under Dio, so that I don't get like Jolynn Turner, you know, I don't get like Street of Dreams thrown in with Kill the King, because they were all different bands and different sounds, and they don't really go together real good. You know, that's really why things like that never last that long, you know?
Yeah. Lasted two albums, though.
So you're not into like a hard rock Jack FM type format. You want what you want. You want to stick with one thing and stay with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we go to...
I do tape requests, but if I don't like them, I'm going to tell you to fuck off.
Oh, man. So let's go to Killers, released February 2nd, 1981. This is one of my favorite album covers of all time. I think it's one of the best album covers ever.
Yeah,
this is, I think, where Eddie first.
Yeah, the first album cover, it looks a little, I don't know, goofy.
It looks like a fifth grader drew it.
Yeah, it looks like the first draft of what became Eddie.
Right, yeah.
But no, I mean, and this is the other Paul Di'Anno album, and I think it's produced much better. I think musically it has a better sound to it. It's not nearly as raw as the first one.
No, and I don't think the songs as a whole stand up to the first one either. I mean, there's some great songs here. Wrathchild's amazing.
Yeah, Wrathchild is good, and
Innocent Exile is good.
Purgatory is good. Yeah. Killers is good, but there's a lot of filler, and it's not killer.
I think Murders in the Rue Morgue is a great one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
one. Yeah, but I always get that mixed up with the Wasp song, Murders in the Rue Morgue.
So. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Genghis Khan's pretty good little instrumental. Mm. See, it's an instrumental. You can like that one because there's no Paul Di'Anno on it, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to sell him on these two albums. I don't know. Honestly, with these first two, just from what I've listened to recently, you know, really trying to get into these, I don't know. I kind of like how adventurous they were with it, though. Because, I mean, and what I'm saying is adventurous. Somebody else like you might say, well, they weren't being adventurous. They just didn't know what the hell they were yet.
Well, they weren't. And the thing is nobody else was doing them. This is the same thing that everybody says. Like Motorhead has said it at one time. Judas Priest said it. I mean, we didn't do this to start something. It just happened.
Right.
Right.
You know, they're just doing something different. And it caught on.
Right.
And then everybody started rehashing it in different ways, and it evolved into everything else. Maiden, to me, and Priest, but I think Maiden is up there a little higher for me, is really what metal was in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that has come since has evolved into other forms of metal. That's where the tree starts splintering. But it all ties back to probably Maiden and Priest from 80, 81, 82, you know?
Yeah, well, they're the benchmarks.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's really where the two guitar thing took off. And I honestly don't think that a band is really, really good, can be called really metal if they don't have two guitars.
Yeah, but I give Thin Lizzy a little credit for the two guitar thing before I...
Yeah, but they weren't metal.
No, they were not.
They're not a metal band. Get your genres right, dude.
Hey, yeah. Subgenres. Before we leave Paul Di'Anno era Maiden, because I know you're not a huge fan of that, but what do you think would have happened had he stayed in the band?
They would have broke up and they wouldn't be around together. They might have gotten through one more album, but I don't think so. And they would have broken up and
just because of dysfunction.
And they would have gone and done something else.
Yeah, because Paul Di'Anno was insane, right?
They got rid of Di'Anno because they had already seen Bruce.
Right.
And they were already thinking about
replacing him.
And they were already thinking that Bruce was going to be the guy to replace him.
Right, because Bruce was in Samson.
So, yes, and they toured together.
And Paul was a loose cannon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean...
Cocaine
and Steve
and
Harris
violence.
Hates punk music.
Yeah, he's made supposedly. That very, very clear over the years. So.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, dysfunction aside, say they got along with the guy, what kind of stuff do you think
I think they still would have died out because it just wouldn't have been... if that had happened with Di'Anno, Priest would have passed him in the fast lane, and Priest would have taken over, and they would have kind of fallen to the wayside and gone away.
I know there's going to be some early Maiden fans that are going to have an issue with that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate it, but again,
I don't
hate
it.
I still think with Di'Anno's ego, he early on would have wanted to start doing things on his own.
Yeah.
And he would have cut off to go do solo he was always into his own thing. That was one of the disconnects between him and the rest of the band in the first place. So it would have never happened.
Right. Well, it all works out for rock and roll and heavy metal in the end, because that brings us to our next album, which is the first one with Bruce Dickinson, and man, one of the greatest albums of all time.
I closed out last week's show with Hallowed Be Thy Name.
This is a Christian album, right? Number of the Beast?
Yeah.
It's the first Christian heavy metal band.
Yeah, let's get into this, because Billy came to my party yesterday, and we got into this bit, because I was telling him that my memory of Iron, this album was my earliest memory of Iron Maiden, was when the video for the title track came out.
Yeah.
I was one of the first kids on my block to have MTV. And we stayed up late at night, me and my friends, and this video came on and scared the shit out of us.
Yes.
I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And then I remember not just my parents, but almost everyone I know's parents were just freaked out by this band. And, you know, when the chorus is 666, the number of the beat, like, people don't read into the lyrics all the way. They take what they hear and they go, oh, satanic.
Well, they never do, because they're afraid that if they hear the lyrics, they're going to be put into some trance and go kill a goat somewhere in somebody's backyard.
So I brought this up to you yesterday, and you were like, no, it's not about them being satanic at all.
If you and we'll talk about this when we get to the albums and the tracks.
Yeah.
The thing I've always loved about Maiden is they're like storytellers, but the stories are true stories. A lot of it is from history, and the Bible is a part of history.
Yeah.
They take things from history books. I mean, Run to
like
the Hills, okay?
Way.
Run to the Hills is about the Indian in America.
Right.
These guys are from England. What the fuck do they know about the Indian War in America? Wow. Well, they read it in history books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? If the Indians had have had this song behind them while they were getting shot up by the Cowboys in the 1800s, they might have kicked their ass, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it. Because this is a badass song.
Yeah, it
so,
is.
So, you know, it's history.
That was, you can, that was my first Maiden.
It's
was
a history
Run to the
thing.
Hills.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Prisoner, I mean, it's from a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a story about a guy from a movie. Children of the Damned is a story.
I love that,
you know,
song.
From way back in the 1600s or something like that. And, I mean, you know, 22 Acacia Avenue is about a prostitute's address and who hasn't been there before. So, I mean, it's all history. And
such a revealing episode about
that's
Billy.
That's the thing, though, is bands know that if they were just to come out and you know, put Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, and, you know, text 52 font or whatever with just a blank cover, nobody was going to listen to it.
Yeah.
So it's the cover art. Back in the day, for you young people that don't know, there used to be something called album covers that you could actually see.
Yeah.
Old.
And that, like, I guarantee you, when you first got into music, like me, is what attracted you to buy albums.
Totally.
Sure.
Because we had no way to preview these damn things to hear if they were any good.
Yeah, that's, I think, speaks to why we're all Kiss fans.
I honestly can say probably, I mean, I know y'all are going to hate me, but if it wasn't for the makeup in the beginning, I would have thought Kiss sucked.
See, and I probably would have never got into Kiss without it either because I was a small
kid. But I was 8 years old, but that's the reason why 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds weren't into them.
Right.
Because they were thought they were for kids.
Right.
So
that's just the disconnect. It's a generational thing, so, you know. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just the way it is.
Not like Iron Maiden back then, where they definitely thought this is not for children.
Yeah. The cover of this album is, I mean, it's one of the most striking ones, and it definitely goes jumps out and grabs you.
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember a lot of public outrage over, oh God, look at these satanic guys in Iron Maiden and everything. And the rumors would get started. It was a different time, because now everything you can look up on the internet.
Well, I went and saw Bon Jovi a couple of years ago, too, not to get off track, but there was people processing that, too.
Bon Jovi?
Yes.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Housewife protesting? I don't know.
There was a guy with a loudspeaker throwing Christian things out there and saying that was bad music and all this stuff.
Wow.
I just laughed at him.
That's not.
I just stepped out of my time machine, and I'm here to save the people of the future.
Right.
Slippery When Wet was 30 years ago, dude.
Right.
We're past it.
Dang.
Oh man. No, but I mean, I thought we would go through each album. I mean, I don't know if you wanted to go through like all the track listings and stuff, but
we could hit the good ones. I mean, Iron Maiden. I mean, it's not a perfect album. There's a couple of duds, I think, but I mean, as far as a metal album, it would be in my top five of all time for everybody.
There isn't on this album
It's not that the album is perfect or not. It's just this is the iconic metal album that kind of is responsible for spawning everything that we want to call metal after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Anybody in any metal band from Metallica, Slayer, Foo Fighters, anything that where they think they're called metal, at some point in their life, they will reference that this album changed something in them.
Right.
You know, and made them want to do something.
Yeah.
It was the devil taking over their soul.
Yeah. And, you know, my uncle had goats, so I could just go sacrifice a goat whenever the hell I wanted to.
You could have, yeah.
But, I mean, we ate it after. I mean, you
know. At least you went used the Ted Nugent ethic, right? And, you know,
I learned from Uncle Ted.
Makes it all right.
All right, so let's go to 1983 and Peace of Mind, another awesome album cover.
Yeah.
They're all good. I don't
they're
have to say that
good,
for all
of
them, but they're all good. But, you know, their album covers are as famous as their music. I mean,
sometimes more so,
sometimes
I think.
More so, yeah.
If you ask somebody in the Hot Topic, I would have to go with the T-shirts.
Well, yeah. I have noticed that they've had more cool Iron Maiden shirts at Hot Topic than any other band, so there's a reason for that.
Right.
So, all right, Peace of Mind, 1983. I don't know. How do you think this one stacks up against the
I like this one better than Number of the Beast.
Do you?
Just because it's a little different. This is where Nico came in.
Yeah.
And the drumming on this is just it actually changes the way the music sounds.
Right.
I can't explain it because I'm not a drummer. It's kind of like when you hear Eric Carr opening Creatures of the Night. It's just bombastic.
And you know it's not Peter Criss.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. You know, from what I know of these two albums, I think this one's better than Number of the Beast. It's more of a cohesive sounding record.
There's some damn good songs on.
I think there's people that just don't want to admit it, but I think really there's a lot of people that believe that. I mean, to me, it's just it's just like one of your favorite bands. They just get better and better and better.
Yeah,
you know, different but better.
Especially by the Blaze Bailey years. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, this thing. I mean, look at this. Where Eagles Dare. It's war history.
An awesome
Revelations.
Track.
That's the part of the Bible that churches don't want to talk about.
Right.
You know,
Flight of Icarus. That's mythology.
Flight of Icarus. Yeah. That's a book that we were supposed to. You know, we talked about that in school and. You know, stuff like that. So, Die With Your Boots On. It's about war, soldiers.
Yeah.
So, the Trooper, The Trooper.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about true life. This isn't like they're singing about, you know, killing babies and raping women and stuff.
Right.
You know, that's later,
but that's what people that just all they did was looked at the album covers back then. That's what they're scared of. I'm surprised my parents never had a problem with it. But.
I don't know. Maybe part of why I never got into Maine is like they never sung about banging groupies or anything. Like, it was always about,
oh, they do that later.
It was always about
well, Gangland.
Stuff.
They had that song Gangland. That was about gangbanging chicks.
Yeah, but I mean, that was like once in a while. But like, I don't know. And then they covered the Cross-Eyed Mary. That's a chick. So.
You're the reason why their number one hit in America is Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter.
Well, he thought it was a slaughter
like
concert.
He thought it was a slaughter concert. Totally about groupies.
Bring your daughter to the slaughter concert.
All right, next. Let's go fast.
Okay.
Before I lose my train of thought.
All right. What do we got next?
Before I get hit on the Nelson album.
So let's move on to Power Slave.
This is my favorite.
1984.
Power Slave. Is my favorite Maiden album.
Mine too.
And it is my third favorite album of all time. This is one of my five Desert Island discs.
Really? Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, and part of it is the imagery. I mean, I saw them on the Peace of Mind tour, and they like, you know, they supposedly killed Eddie. Mm-hmm. You know, that was back in our days. We didn't know that Eddie was going to be something real. We didn't even know what he was. It was just something on the album cover.
Right.
But he actually came out, and we're like, holy shit. And then at the end of the show, they kill him. They, beat the fuck out of him and killed him. The whole thing about Power Slave was, you know, it's Egyptian-themed, the pharaohs, King Tut, all that stuff.
Yeah.
They're resurrecting him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and during the Power Slave tour, they resurrect Eddie, and he comes back to life. And it, I'm telling you, that was one of the coolest freaking things I ever saw as a child.
The stage show was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
at that time in 1984, 1985, it had to be the most expensive show going on. I mean,
it
was freaking just phenomenal.
God,
and
what a hard job being a roadie for that.
No kidding.
I mean, I can't understand why people don't hold this album in high regard.
So this album isn't one of the faves of the diehards? Because I don't know.
Yeah, because when people talk about the discography as a whole, I think this album really gets overlooked. And
there's still people that say Number of the Beast is better for some reason. I don't know.
I don't think so, man. They're both good, and they're both great classic albums, but just me personally, I mean, this was the Maiden album that really, really grabbed me when I was first discovering them. And when I got this one and put it on, and it's awesome from beginning to finish. There's not a weak song on it. And just this was what made me a huge Iron Maiden fan when I was getting to that age where I was old enough to start getting into my own kind of music. This was the one that did it for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when 2 Minutes to Midnight came out. That was the first single on it. And the video, you know, this was 1984. We were kind of still in the little Cold War thing with Russia. I was 15, so I kind of knew about the army and war and stuff like that, and I was always fascinated with World War II and World War I stuff. And I mean, that video, that song, just it just enamored me because I was like, well, this is awesome because it was talking about World War II.
Yeah, and I remember there was a big fear about, you know, America versus Russia. And
people
thought we were going to get nuked at any time.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it was scary stuff that they were writing about, you know, and it was real.
But it was honest. I mean, it was coming from, you know, Steve Harris gets, you know, ideas from newspaper stories.
Yep.
You know, things that are going on in the world.
Well, let me ask you this. Since you're a fan, it is a good thing, but like, is it always a good thing that he writes almost everything for the band? Like,
no, it's not, but it's just that sometimes when something works, you just got to keep going with it.
And you think the rest of the guys were like, okay, it works, so we'll just let you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do though think that in later years, he did start kind of being a dictator, but we'll get into that when we talk about the albums.
Like, hey, Steve, I wrote something. He's like, shut up and play your
drum. Drummers don't write songs. Sorry.
Some of them do.
No. Peter Criss doesn't. He hasn't written every song ever.
Come on. I'm just poking the bear. All right.
Don't poke the cat, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Ace is High, a good album opener, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great album opener.
That's the thing about Maiden, too. I mean, yeah, this, I would have to say, a great album opener.
Yeah.
And then a great album closer with Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, yeah. Probably one of the greatest
album closers ever. This is something where it's like three songs put into one.
Yeah. I mean, it's epic.
This is before Dream Theater started doing time changes every five bars.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but this is epic.
And
I mean,
this is just,
this is one of the first epic songs that I ever remember getting into. And I'm not a real long song person, but
yeah.
I mean, because it's a story.
And me and him talked about this yesterday. Because, like, when, you know, the stereotype about Maiden is, oh, their songs are like 10 minutes long.
No, they're not.
But if you look at the albums, it's no more than usually two tracks or three tracks out of a whole album. You know, the rest of them are 5 minutes or less most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I hear a bunch of people talking, too, about metal albums on other podcasts that say that, you know, these albums are 28 minutes long or 33 minutes long. So people are bitching about albums being too short, and people are bitching about albums being too long. So what the fuck do you want?
People just like to bitch.
You know?
Right. But, yeah, that settles that.
You know. But yeah, I mean, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, it's a story, and it's a cool history thing. You know, it's a good song.
Cool.
Takes you to different things.
Yeah.
Man, so, I love this whole album, Flash of the Blade, The Duelist, Back
Power
in the Village.
Power Slave is just...
And yeah, Power Slave,
when they did
the
that live,
track.
Oh my God, that is just... Because that is just awesome.
Even the instrumental on here is super cool. The Lost for Words, Big Aura thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to move to...
Stars.
Move on to the...
1986.
Yeah, the album that some people jumped off the boat.
Somewhere in Time. This was the album that I owned on cassette back when it was new.
Yeah.
A friend gave it to me. He was like, you need to become an Iron Maiden fan. And I had it, and I never still didn't become an Iron Maiden fan.
See, it's because they didn't give you Power
Slave.
Yeah,
they shouldn't give me Power Slave.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. I think that might be a thing. You might be right about that, because
maybe this
album
Because I got into Power Slave, and I didn't like this album nearly as much as I liked Power Slave at the time. You know, I felt like this was, for whatever reason, just didn't grab me the same way that Power Slave did. After time, you know, years later, now I go back and listen to this one, and it grabs me strong. Yeah, I see the greatness in it now. But at the time, it was just like, man, you know, this is okay. I'm going to go listen to Power Slave some more. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's got good stuff. I mean, I loved Wasted Years.
Wasted Years is just...
It should have been a radio hit.
I know.
I don't see how it wasn't.
See, I thought it was. I mean, I heard it all
the time.
I
thought it was, too, because they played it on MTV.
I mean, well, I can.
We didn't have stats back then, so I thought, whenever I thought I saw a video on MTV every 2 hours, I thought it was doing great, but apparently it wasn't.
Wasted Years went to 11 on the Irish singles chart, 18 on UK, and 9 on the UK albums chart. Didn't chart.
I guess more people were into Cinderella in 86 than Iron Maiden.
But it fit in with that stuff, though.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, it's melodic enough. You know, but I don't know. It's one of those you listen to now, and it still doesn't sound like it came from 1986.
No.
But it's so different than most of their other music, too. But I don't
know.
Well,
I mean, I think it's slightly, but it's just, people just need to get over it, man. Bands have to evolve, you know.
Oh, right.
And it's not a big, drastic change. I mean,
and,
it's not,
but
you know,
was Wasted Years a shot at, here, Iron Maiden needs to get a hit single?
They wanted to have a radio hit. They wanted to sell albums.
And also, of note, written solely by Adrian Smith.
Yeah.
Steve did not write any of that song. So, I mean, that makes it sound different, too.
This is at the point where I believe they started not letting Bruce write as much.
Okay.
He was wanting to do acoustic stuff and wanted to start doing other things. And
that just wasn't Maiden.
This is this album is where he started kind of thinking,
I'm about to leave.
Yeah. I'm not really 100% into what we're doing.
Well, what are your favorite songs on this one?
Oh, Jesus. I mean,
the title track.
Wasted Years, Caught Somewhere in Time, Sea of Madness. Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner is just, I don't know. I was in track in high school, and I was a long distance runner, so maybe that, I don't know. But, and I was lonely.
Did you listen to that while you worked out for track?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lonely, and I was a long distance runner. But, I mean, Deja Vu, though. Deja Vu. Oh my God, Deja Vu is such an awesome song. I mean, I don't understand. And then Alexander the Great, another story song, long track, but it's good. It you know,
they were really into ending their albums with long songs.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of their little.
That's cool. And you think about that too, like even with Power Slave and Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner and Alexander the Great. you know, this is kind of, you're getting to see the beginning of progressive metal here too, because this, the bands that, you know, are known today as prog rock, were getting influenced by these few albums that are coming out right here, I believe, because you're getting the epic songs, the long ones, you know, and like you said, the way the songs are written and the different key changes.
Yeah, but Yes was doing this back in the 70s.
Right, that's true. That's true. I wonder how much influence Yes had on Maiden.
It's possible.
It's possible because Steve Harris was into a lot of that 70s prog stuff. He was very heavily
influenced
in that stuff.
That's
who's
buying all the albums.
He just always wanted to be heavier and faster.
Did they have songs that galloped? I don't know.
I bet they did.
Yeah, they did.
So.
They did.
Well, Roundabout had a gallop.
When I get that new Yes album that I ordered off the Decibel Geek link,
it happened again this
week. I'll let you know.
Yeah,
I actually have a Yes CD in my car.
We're waiting. We're going to see how many weeks in a row. I think we're up to like four or five now.
Well, now we at least know that it's Steve Harris that's buying all the albums.
Maybe it's him.
Through the link.
Well, we talked yesterday about this. Because we're listening to some of these songs, and I'm telling Billy, I'm like, you know, is it wrong of me to say that I hear some, you know, late 70s Judas Priest sound of this stuff? And he's like, no, it's not, because they were probably directly influential on these guys.
You got to think Priest knew Maiden when Maiden first came out. Maiden knew Priest. You know how big London is?
Yeah.
Well, you know. England as a whole. I'm not sure
in the local rock scene,
they
had
knew
to
of each other.
Paths, sure.
That's the thing about the new wave of British heavy metal is when it all came to America, we all thought it was all separate stuff.
Right.
But in England, where it was all happening before it came over here, they were all like all for one for all.
Yeah,
you know,
I suppose because it was a community.
A community. It wasn't this thing like in the late 80s with the Sunset Strip where everybody was in competition with each other.
Right.
They were helping each other out over there.
Well, in Bruce's singing style, you can hear a lot of Rob Halford influence on it. You know, but I mean, so would you call Somewhere in Time their version, their Turbo?
No, because I like Somewhere in Time better than Turbo.
Yeah,
a little bit, but yeah, better than Turbo.
Okay. All right.
Well, I would have to say, as a whole, for a whole discography, I like Maiden's. They have more whole good albums than Judas Priest does.
You think?
Yeah. To me.
I don't know.
My opinion.
I don't know. I love some Judas Priest.
I mean, Screaming for Vengeance is like tied with Power Slave to me because they're both perfect albums.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When
like
you
Point
get into some
of
the other
though.
Stuff, they have some good songs, but not whole good albums. And with Maiden, even if it's not a whole good album, there's more good songs on them than what I do when I talk about album bands versus bands is I try to go by album against album at that same time and judge by that.
Right.
I don't see you can't put Seven Sun up against British Steel.
Well, let's talk about that.
That's
one
ridiculous.
Next. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work. So, but you put British Steel up against the first Maiden album.
Mm-hmm.
It matches up a little bit.
It matches up pretty closer.
Right. But, I got you.
Okay, let's get into their now
1988.
Epic
Yeah.
Seventh Son of a Seventh Son.
This
oh, my
is,
God.
This is the
what
one
a
that
good
brought
year.
Me back. Yeah.
What a good year for music. I mean, in general.
Yeah.
I mean, we had George Michael out with Sex.
All right, we're done here.
Thank you for tuning in. This is epic.
I mean, this is another... I mean... Just look at the album cover. They changed themes. You know, Somewhere in Time was cool because I was real big into Clint Eastwood at the time, and that's kind of what that Cyborg Eddie reminds me of.
Clint Eastwood, the gun, I can see that facial expression.
Yeah. So, and this one is just another theme change. I mean, it's like Ice World or something.
Yeah.
You know, Planet Hoth, or you know, there's probably Han Solo and Luke in here and the Tauntaun somewhere. But
well,
it's just
inside the Tauntaun.
It's just
the
epic.
Covers.
This is just something where, when I went to get the new album, you see the album cover and you can't help but buy it,
right?
Because you just want to, even if I didn't like it and would never listen to it again, I could just hold and look at this album cover for hours and hours, and it's just awesome. I mean,
I feel bad for kids nowadays
I feel terrible for the iTunes generation.
Yeah, if you see a tiny little square JPEG and that's all you get.
It's terrible.
And they can't hold it unless they pick up their computer or, you know.
Somebody holding their monitor up.
You know, I can stroke this and, you know.
Wait a minute now.
But, let's talk about Seventh Son.
You know, love the band, but don't love the band.
Seventh Son is
like
an epic.
In love with them.
This is another epic. I would say... to me, this is a perfect album.
Yeah, it's good.
There's not a bad song on it. And
this,
I don't get. I know they say it was a concept album,
yeah,
but it lost it after the first side. But I don't see that it did. I don't see that it's a big concept album, but I do see there is a little bit of a theme to it. But yeah. I mean, it's as a concept album, I would still put it up there better than The Elder.
Although it goes, yeah, well, that's not saying much. But it, I mean,
I rate it a little higher.
It
than
does
that.
Go off the rails when they end the album with a Billy Joel cover song, though, doesn't it?
Jeez,
Chris.
Put on this big pointy hat that Billy brought with
him. I'd pay money to hear Iron Maiden do a Billy Joel cover song, though, wouldn't you?
Well, I'll have to go through some of my deep tracks that I got, but they might.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you think of Moonchild as an album opener?
Moonchild is great. Yeah. I mean, it kind of has that slow start, and it kind of, you know, I don't understand people to say, oh, well, this is too slow, this sucks, and they just turn it off.
Give it some time.
To me, it's like when something's slow like that starting off, it should pull you in and make you want to hear where it goes.
Right.
And when you're listening to Moonchild, it goes and it kicks in, and you're like, "Oh man, this is freaking awesome!"
Right? Yeah, so it
just goes from there and there. Infinite Dreams, Can I Play with Madness was a big, a big hit for him.
I remember I seen the video
Evil
for that
Men Do,
and I was like, "Oh, awesome. Maiden's back!" Yeah, awesome. You know?
Yeah, that song was. I mean, it was another very radio friendly track. It wasn't too much for people to handle.
And this was '88. This was when hard rock and hair metal was starting to peak, and
pretty much,
you know, they were getting a lot of airplay.
Yeah.
You know, they were putting I think a lot of that ruled the charts more than, like, you know, Madonna and stuff like that. So they were kind of taking over at this point.
Well, like you said, it was a good year because you had all different styles of rock and metal, and it was all getting airplay.
Yep,
it was just dominating.
Yep.
Yeah, and they were encouraged to bring more. You know, they were financially, and
you'd hear this, everything. And you'd hear Rat, then you'd hear Guns N' Roses, and you'd hear Metallica,
and it all sounded great together.
It was just fun to be a rock and metal fan.
Yep.
Shit, yeah.
But I mean, So you like every single track on
this? This is a perfect album to me. But I mean, Power Slave is better. But this is a perfect album to me.
Yeah,
I would have to say this is probably my second favorite Iron Maiden album.
I gotta agree with Billy. Yeah, not quite as good as Power Slave. Way better than Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, when this came out and I saw the video for Can I Play with Madness, I just felt like, holy shit, Iron Maiden's back, you know, because Somewhere in Time didn't quite do it for me, you know, and it was
Somewhere in Time was
let down a little by it.
I'm not sure about the album sales, but I mean, I saw them on the tour and I know they toured, but I still, after the Live After Death tour, it didn't hold up to that. Right. You know, that's a lot to meet up to,
right?
And so I know it might have been seen as a failure a little bit, but they had to do this because this, I think, took them back right to the top. You know,
did you get to see them on this tour?
Yeah
with all the ice stuff up on the stage. Nice. How was
epic? I mean, I went and saw them when they redid this, when they did the Made in England tour a couple years ago and came through here.
Pretty
much the same everything. And it just took me back, and it was just like one of the greatest moments ever.
That's one thing I respect about them is they will celebrate their history.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we're Kiss fans.
Yeah.
They almost like try to turn their back on it all the time.
Yeah, I don't see Kiss coming up going, hey,
some
we're doing hotter than hell in its entirety.
It would be awesome.
Yeah. There's a lot of diehard Maiden fans that don't like that, though.
Oh, they just want to hear the same hits over and over.
I suppose you're always going to have people like that. So, you wouldn't expect it out of Iron Maiden fans.
Fans are just fickle, but, you know.
Well, and I
like what I like, and I don't give a shit what everybody else says. So.
I do notice that they reissued this in 95, and there's some interesting stuff on there. They re-recorded Prowler and Charlotte the Harlot with Bruce.
The Castle recordings. I've got that and Somewhere in Time on
CD.
That's
obviously with Bruce on it.
They had a bonus disc.
Nice.
Yeah, they had a bonus disc.
And they covered,
no, those are live. Those
are
live tracks.
Live?
Yeah, those are live tracks.
They also cover Massacre by Thin Lizzy.
Yeah.
I have to hear this.
Nice. Prowler and all that stuff are live tracks.
Okay, cool.
On the bonus disc.
All right, cool.
So,
I know y'all, those of you screaming at your iPod, you're an idiot. Yeah, I know. I don't know Maiden. That's why I brought Billy
That's
here.
Why we got Billy.
Okay.
Well, teach us.
What are you doing? Dead air. Not good for a podcast. Talk. All right. Okay, so let's go to 1990. No Prayer for the Dying.
I like.
You
want to
talk about
too.
Bruce's solo album? Yeah. Are we not talking about Bruce's solo album?
I thought we were just doing Maiden.
Okay.
I mean, I love Tattooed Millionaire. I like.
Well, Bruce left, did a solo album. Adrian Smith left.
But this came out first, right?
No, Tattooed Millionaire came out first.
It was 89.
Okay, so that got released Tattooed Millionaire came out before?
Adrian that? Smith leaves after the seventh son for reasons I can't remember. So for whatever reason, Bruce Dickinson decided to do a solo album. I'm talking about this because No Prayer for the Dying introduces Yannick Gers, and he was on Tattooed Millionaire with Bruce Dickinson. That's why he brought him into the band.
He's the connection. Okay.
So was there a disconnect between Bruce and Adrian Smith?
I don't really remember why Adrian left. I think it might have been over songwriting or, you know, the same stuff. And he put out that solo album called ASAP, and it was like horrible. There was one good song on it, but it was horrible.
Well, the always accurate Wikipedia says he left the band during pre-production, unhappy with the direction that it was taking.
Yeah, I do remember something in the documentary where Iron Maiden, I think it was on the Somewhere in Time tour, and a little bit on Seven Sons, started doing the let's play the songs faster so we can play more, kind of the Kiss thing that nobody liked. And I know he did say in one of the documentaries that he didn't like that. He hated that they were speeding up songs.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it says he had only contributed to the song Hooks in You.
Yeah.
So he was probably pissed because he wasn't being listened to.
And he also will not bring his daughter to the Slaughter
concert.
Maybe he'd become a born-again Christian and wasn't into the, you know, sacrifices and stuff by then. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
because that's when they started worshiping the devil.
Yeah. He went in
1990.
Slayer was getting more press for being satanic than Maiden, so he left.
Well, they
he
were.
Like that.
You're right. And I guess Yannick Gers also worked with Ian Gillan.
Yeah, he was in the Ian Gillan band.
I didn't know
that's cool.
And he was in a blues band, well, kind of blues rock band called White Horse in the 70s.
No, White Spirit.
Yeah, White Spirit.
Yeah.
White Spirit.
I just corrected Billy.
I've heard some of their stuff.
Wow.
And yeah.
Mark that on your calendar.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. So what are our thoughts on this album?
I don't understand people getting slagging on this album.
I think Tailgunner is a great song.
I like it. I mean, there's still some clunkers on it, but I mean, you open up with Tailgunner.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. That is another great opening track.
The Assassin.
Assassin is great. Yeah.
Holy Smoke is one of my favorite.
And I've heard
Maiden
people
tunes.
Talk about that Holy Smoke was a funny song and like a joke song. Well, I could understand a metal band like that at that point wanting to have a little bit of a sense of humor.
Sure.
You know, not
and
taking
and also
so,
that song is kind of sticking
wrong.
It back in the face of all the people
exactly.
that have been protesting.
Exactly.
And then at that time, all the televangelists are getting busted doing all their dirty deeds behind the curtains. And so this was Maiden's way to kind of stick it back to them. So it's not like a typical Maiden song where it's a historical story or something like The Assassin or Mother Russia. You know, this is more like, a current thing, you know, and I like it. I love the song. When the video came out, that I thought, man, this is freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I was pretty well in love with Iron Maiden at this point.
But
there wasn't much they could do wrong.
For 1990.
Yeah, for 90.
We had Metallica, one of the biggest bands on the planet, Bon Jovi. This was just kind of an influx for them. And I honestly think it was because of Adrian Smith. When he left, you know, a lot of people thought, but, you know, I guess they thought he was Iron Maiden for some reason, and it just wasn't going to do good. And they did put out I like some stuff on here, but I do understand that some people think it's a subpar album, so.
More disjointed.
Fans started dropping off at this point. The tour didn't do real good.
Yeah.
You know. But again,
it was 1990, you know, so it's like, look at the world of music at that time and how things are changing.
I mean, I know
it's
people don't want to
anymore.
People don't want to admit it, but there was a time in 1990 when Bon Jovi was way bigger in the world than Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that's true.
And Judas Priest.
Look, 91, so, 1 year later from now, you know, when they're getting ready to tour on this thing, you know, it's the grunge deal is
going
on.
Well, the Black album comes out, and that's pretty much the biggest thing on the planet.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I like it. It's a good album. Not complete, you know. There's like you say,
it's better than The Elder, so what can you say? I judge every album by The Elder.
Is it better than The Elder? Okay.
All right. Well, I think Lou Reed and Metallica is better than The Elder, but that's my opinion.
I don't even listen to that shit.
I'll take The Elder
I'm
over
kidding,
Lulu.
Kiss fans. Don't put your pitchfork
Jeez,
away.
Yeah, The Elder isn't that bad.
No,
Jeez, Chris.
What do you think of them releasing Holy Smoke and Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter as singles? Do you think that was smart?
It got him
Holy
attention.
Holy Smoke, maybe. I mean, it got him attention. I love the song.
Yeah,
I get
I
the
too.
Joke.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter.
Uh-huh.
I love that fucking song. But I do understand how if there were any churches still protesting this shit in 90, which I don't remember, that wasn't a good thing for that. But other than that, I mean, this is a song they still do to this day.
Yeah.
Right. And it never dropped from the set list.
Right.
And it's just freaking awesome. It's like a galloping song. It's got a good everything, good hooky chorus, and right. I mean everything.
Some good double entendre.
You know, yeah.
I don't think it's the greatest album cover, though.
No, it's not their best.
It's not their best, but it, you know.
You didn't bring that one, did you?
I don't have that one.
Oh, you don't?
I have that on CD, see?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you were slipping for a second there. Okay. All right. Yeah, but it's not that impressive of a cut. It looks like they kind of got lazy on that one.
I mean, well, yeah, if you put it up against Seven Sun and Power Slave, no, but I mean, okay. It's better than the next one to me.
Yeah, you know? 1992.
This is where Derek Riggs had checked out.
Yeah, you get Fear of the Dark.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where it's Eddie's the tree monster.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
But it doesn't even look like Eddie anymore.
No, I guess it really don't.
It's like a cracked down vampire. Eddie.
He's half a tree.
But.
Don't hug that one.
Another great album. I mean,
yeah.
Fear of the Dark by 92. It kind of took them back to the top. You know, this was a big album for them. They did a real big tour with them. They did a double bill for about 10 dates with Judas Priest on the Painkiller tour, where it was both of them playing full sets.
Yeah.
And I got to see that in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was freaking phenomenal.
Oh, I bet. I bet you get those two bands playing together in the same bill. They're really trying to put it out there. And prove
it's a good album. This might be one where you could say there might be a couple of, you know, too many songs on it.
Yes, it's a 12 song.
But, you know, but there's shorter songs, but still, there's a couple of duds in here. But I mean, it's a real good album as a whole.
Yeah,
I don't understand. Some people just don't get it.
So is this one not well liked by among the fan base so much?
I think it's the early Maiden fans. You know, if you're a you know, but. I mean, it did well. I remember everybody I know had it.
Because I remember the videos for Be Quick or Be Dead and from Here to Eternity, and both of them are awesome songs.
The thing that I think people slag on this is Wasting Love.
Yeah.
And even if you call this a ballad, this is an Iron Maiden ballad. It's not like freaking I Remember You or, you know, it's still, it's a cool song. I mean, I like it. Yeah. You know?
You know, from what I hear, I know a few fans that are as big of Maiden fan as you, and they seem to like it. But I mean, I didn't know there was much.
Well, I know some. I know Maiden fans that just because they don't like that song, just slag on the whole album, and I don't agree with that either.
Well,
but I mean, it's got great songs. I mean, let's go through it. Be Quick or Be Dead, From Here to Eternity, great
love
song.
It.
Afraid to Shoot Strangers,
yeah, that's
another
good
great song. Fear's the Key, Childhood's End, those are probably the two clunkers. Wasting Love, The Fugitive, oh my god,
The Fugitive
is an awesome fucking song. Chains of Misery, to me, I like the song, but it is a little, for Maiden, a little on the poppy side.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, the Apparition, that's a little bit, man. But Judas Be My Guide, oh my god, it's freaking cool. And Fear of the Dark, I mean, it's kind of creepy and scary when you hear them sing it. So.
Right.
And I don't fear the dark, but when I hear this song, and I kind of do for the 5 or 6 minutes that they're playing.
Did you ever sit in a dark room and listen to the album?
No, I always have the lights on when I listen to Iron Maiden.
He's never that brave.
This isn't bedtime music.
I want Eddie to jump out at you.
Out of a tree.
If I want to go fall asleep, I'll listen to The Elder.
Oh, because we're going to talk about The Elder through this whole show, aren't we?
You better not cut this shit out either, motherfucker.
It's kind of like most blank space.
That's all cool. Right. I see this on the
reissue.
All
right, let's do a quick recap of what do you want to say before we go?
I was going to say, on the reissue, they do a cover of I Can't See My Feelings by Budgie. I've never heard that. That's awesome.
I want to hear that.
I love that song.
Budgie's a great band.
Yeah, I can imagine Maiden doing that. You ever heard that song?
Mm-hmm. That's
badass.
That's the thing about Maiden, though. They did some weird covers.
In Montrose.
You know? But they did them good. But they picked stuff that
you wouldn't think they
would. No, that you would never think they would do.
Right.
Maiden doing Montrose? Like, really? Sammy Hagar Montrose?
Yeah.
So,
you go. And also, this one, Fear of the Dark, co-produced by Steve Harris with Martin Birch. I mean, so
Steve's this is where he starts putting his hands in the pot.
Well, even if you look at the songwriting credits on here, you'll see, like, it's Bruce with Yannick. And then it's Bruce with Yannick again. And then Bruce writes one with Dave Murray. But the Steve Harris songs, it's just him.
Yeah.
You know, just him by himself, like, hey, look what we did. Oh, yeah, that's cool. This is mine. I wrote this.
Well, and we know, too, that probably even if it says Harrison Gears. I mean, it's probably just because Yannick was like, well, let me do this instead of that. And he's like, okay.
He'll get a credit for that.
Yeah. I mean, you know how songwriting credits are back at the end of the day. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons Bruce ended up leaving, though, was because he was tired of the touring. He wanted to do something different. He just, you know, wasn't getting his, they weren't taking his ideas for songs.
Right.
Basically.
And
so
maybe they just had reached a point where they just around each other way too much.
It could be. That happens.
After all them years.
Yeah. It had been, by 92, it had been 10 years for them.
They worked nonstop.
Yeah, they pretty much did. Long tours.
Yeah,
you know,
long tours.
Year and a half tours, year and a half tours.
Okay.
Overall, pretty good album. I think it's worth revisiting for sure.
Yeah.
So Bruce leaves.
Bruce leaves.
And then
in 2000, he comes back for Brave New World.
So what, you didn't, as a Maiden fan, no Blaze Bailey for you? All right,
we're going to get pretty dark here.
All right.
Oh, no.
What leads them to get, did they try out other people, or they just say Blaze?
I don't know the whole story. It's like one of those mysteries, like, you know, who really wrote Beth? I mean, it's just one of those things. And I just remember reading somewhere that they got him because they knew of Wolfsbane, and he was British, and... But I mean, I haven't heard of any stories just saying, and nobody's popping up in social media now. They're saying, oh, well, I auditioned for Iron Maiden as a singer, and you know, like everybody that claims they auditioned for a certain other white face band.
Was Wolfsbane, were they a lot like Maiden?
They were just like a hard rock, maybe edgy metal band from the early or late 80s, early 90s. I mean, they had a couple albums out. They had a video that was a little bit rotated on MTV. Kind of, they got lumped into all that other stuff that was in, you know, MTV bands, you know, Headbangers Ball and all that stuff.
Did you really, really try to give this a chance?
I did. And this album isn't...
We're talking about the X Factor.
X Factor is not that bad. There's some decent songs on here.
Yeah.
But
it's not Maiden, really.
What did it for the fans, I didn't see them on this tour. What did it for fans was after they saw him live.
Yeah.
Because I've heard him live. I saw the X Factor tour. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But because he wasn't good on the Bruce stuff live, the next album, nobody even gave a chance. Which, I mean, to me, it sucks like worse. It's really bad.
Because even at that time, you know, they're still, when they go out and play, they're trying to play the Maiden classics. Blaze Bailey, you know, he's all right.
Well, let's talk about this.
But he's no Bruce Dickinson.
No.
In 96, 98, they put out a best of compilation. I got the original 2-disc book edition of Best of the Beast. And voila, CD1 starts off with Virus, Sign of the Cross, Man on the Edge. All Blaze Bailey songs from X Factor. They're good songs. Mm-hmm. But this was before... I don't even know what the hell you call the next album. Future Real X10. I don't even know. I don't understand
Virtual 11.
Yeah, Virtual X, Virtual 10.
Virtual 11.
Virtual shit. But so you got to think, I mean, at least I think Maiden liked the songwriting, or I don't see why. And a lot of all the latest greatest hits packages for Maiden will usually have probably either Sign of the Cross or Man on the Edge on there.
Right. Really?
So they at least... But, okay, now you can talk about X Factor.
Oh, no.
I'm going to go take a dump.
You're already kind of doing it for me.
I think that pretty well sums
it was
it
horrible.
Up.
There's nothing on here you like.
I would have to give it a listen to again, but just from seeing the track listing.
Yeah. Anything stand out?
Future well, see, real? The Klansmen, they still do. They did the Klansmen on the live album that they did after Brave New World.
So even Bruce sings some of these songs?
He does that one.
Wow.
So I don't know what that means, but I mean,
must have been one that they liked and he thought it was good.
He probably forces them to, but
yeah.
But even that one, I don't like. Even on the live album that they put out, I don't like.
Oh, really? Yeah. So when I asked Billy to do this,
this is a turd.
He was like, "We're gonna go real fast through Blaze Bailey."
It's a turd.
Really? I want to hear from some listeners that think that this stuff is genius. I want to see how many I hear from.
I have never heard of a podcast that talks about Blaze Bailey or Wolfsbane.
Should get him on the show.
All you listeners out there, search iTunes and SoundCloud and see if there's a Wolfsbane podcast that we don't know about.
Or a Blaze Bailey
podcast. Or a Blaze Bailey podcast.
Because
if there is, I'll subscribe to it and I'll give them shitty reviews and tell all these people what fucking idiots they are.
Dear Blaze, I still remember. You still suck.
I saw him live and it was like the worst fucking thing in the world.
It was that bad.
Yeah, it was that bad. There's YouTube footage or something. Yeah. I've heard people that have bootlegs or whatever. It's horrible. Yeah, it was like 98, and yeah, they had no money to do shit by
then.
So
you got the feeling they're just like treading water just to keep making money.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think by that point, they were just trying to keep their brand alive.
Right.
Just riding out the name, yeah.
Well, what else are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame them. I don't blame them, but it's just...
Steve Harris Fat Burning Grill, you know.
It was a bad deal.
I mean, okay, so...
So then you must have been pretty damn happy come roll around 2000, Bruce Dickinson.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Back,
huh? Oh, this album. Oh.
Great album cover, too.
It's great. Yeah, the cover's great.
Yeah.
I remember this came out right when I first got, like, my first computer. And there was, on IronMaiden.com, you could download the wallpaper of this album cover.
Yeah.
And it was like a GIF where it would...
Animate.
It would animate. Yeah. And he would, like, there was lightning and there was rain falling in the background.
I remember that.
And he would blow smoke out and stuff. Oh, that was the coolest fucking thing. I used to masturbate. Oh, wait. Oh, no, I mean, that was just awesome. I loved it. But, yeah, let's talk about the album.
Yeah, please.
Okay, Bruce comes back. Not only does Bruce come back, Adrian Smith comes back.
Yeah.
And they don't fire Yannick.
Yeah, which a lot of fans seem to have an issue with.
Dude, you know what?
They think he's, like, worthless.
Live, I don't care. Live, that extra guitar adds at least a little bit to the show. It's freaking awesome. And I honestly think by this time... People slag on Yannick because he plays a lot of Adrian stuff and Adrian doesn't do some of the stuff, and I honestly think that's because Adrian doesn't want to.
Right.
You know? Oh. He's old and he probably like, just do it.
Yeah.
That'll give me less to do. Sure. They're still getting paid the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, live with the three guitar thing is just incredible, dude.
Now this album I did buy when it came out.
Yeah.
Because I got caught up in everyone
this
talking
is an
about,
awesome album.
Oh my god, Bruce is back in the
band. It's pretty epic. It has a lot of long songs on it.
But the Wicker Man opening.
Yeah, Wicker Man.
Oh man, that's an awesome song.
I remember
song.
When I first heard that, I was like, this is, sounds like what you would think Iron Maiden should sound like.
I was so disappointed when I went and saw the Wicker Man movie with Nicolas Cage and this wasn't on the soundtrack. That's the only reason I went and saw it.
You really want your mind blown, watch the original version of that movie.
The Nicolas Cage one was bad enough. I don't need to watch the original.
Creepy.
But yeah, Wicker Man, I mean, geez. I mean, tell me, that's just, it's awesome.
Yeah. And what are your favorite songs on this one?
Brave New World is great.
Yeah.
Blood Brothers is good. The Mercenary. Fallen Angel is good. The Nomad.
I like the Nomad.
Out of the Silent Planet is good. It's just a good album. I mean, for a comeback album, after he left in 93, so after 7 years coming back, it's good.
And when they got back together, they must have all decided, you know, they sat in a room, rekindled that mutual respect, and said, if we're going to do this, we have to do it as best as we possibly freaking can. And I think they delivered the goods on it. It's an amazing album. If you don't have it, you know the deal. Go to the Amazon link on our website and get this bad boy immediately. And pick up Power Slave, too, if you ain't got that.
Get a hold of me and I'll drop it to you.
Yeah, get them all. Get all these albums.
I'm trying to make some money here.
I mean, this is just the thing that, I mean, they were at a point where they knew they needed Bruce back.
Yeah.
And Bruce, if they wanted to go into the future, they had to get Bruce back. So.
And it's not like Bruce was, you know, hitting number one and selling multi-millions of albums on his own either.
He did good.
He did okay.
His Chemical Wedding album was a little weird, but it was a movie soundtrack. And if I plead for you to go search out this movie, and it's a little creepy, but at least watch it once. But Accident at Birth was awesome, and he had Adrian Smith playing on that, it was kind of the reconnection between them.
Right.
And I really think Bruce and Adrian worked together better than some of the other guys, as far as Steve Harris and Dave Murray and all that stuff.
Right.
But they seem to have better ideas come up for stuff when they're writing together.
Why do we never see Bruce and Steve write together ever?
Because Steve doesn't write with people.
Well, he does at times, but there's never...
I'm telling you, dude, if it says Murray Harris, it's just because, they've been in the band for 40 years. So they're, it's just throwing them a bone.
Now, Brave New World,
did chart well all over the world, and it even went broke. It cracked the top 40 in the U.S. And
this
it,
was a big it, comeback, yeah. dude. I remember the anticipation for this.
Yeah,
because they had ads for it in Metal Edge, whatever magazine was still around at the time. You know, they had the one page ad, you know, telling you it's coming out, whatever. Yeah. This was a big deal when it came out. I mean, this is one that, I mean, I did it for all of them, but this is a major one that I went out and was like, at the record store buying when it came out.
Yeah.
Co-produced by Steve Harris and Kevin Shirley.
Kevin Shirley.
Yeah. So, you know, they got, you brought it, they paid some serious money to bring him on.
They had to. I mean,
yeah. So
I think with the 90s stuff with X Factor and especially the next one, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. They might have been trying to shortcut as far as spending money.
Right.
And Steve Harris is behind all of that. So he probably just figured out that it wasn't going to work.
Right.
So they needed to do something right. And it paid off.
And do something
They're still
big,
around
yeah.
today. Mm-hmm. So apparently it paid off.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
It was worth taking the risk.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we go to Dance of Death. 2003. This comes out, also produced by Steve Harris and Kevin Shirley. Comes out on EMI Columbia. I've heard this album cover get slagged quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
It is weird.
It's like they're trying to do some sort of like virtual reality type.
It's weird.
Type album cover or something. It looks like something out of the Eyes Wide Shut movie.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was just looking at the cover right now.
Yeah,
and I can see Tom Cruise in there.
He's in there.
Oh, jeez.
But, no, I saw him on this tour before the album came out. They opened up the tour with Wildest... They opened the show with Wildest Dreams.
Right.
It might have already been on the radio, or I might have heard it somewhere. And it's a good song. They toured on this tour with Motorhead and Dio. It was a freaking incredible show.
Yeah, I bet it was.
But I got the album, and it took me a little while to get into. I mean, because it's different. It's a little different. But... overall, it's another good album. I mean, it's not horrible, but it's not their best.
Right.
But I mean, it's got some really good songs on it. So I mean, what else can you expect from a band that's been around for 30 years at this point?
Yeah, and it almost seems to me like with the previous one to this, where they got Bruce back, that they went out more to make like a classic sounding, epic, huge, over the top Iron Maiden album. And with this one, a few years later, they're kind of doing things a little bit differently, where they're not saying, okay, now we have to make another quintessential Iron Maiden album to go along with the last one. For this one, I think it's like, well, let's stretch out a little bit more and try some different things.
The thing about Maiden is I don't think they ever made two albums back-to-back that sounded the same.
No, they switched it up a lot.
They switched it up a little
no sister
each
albums.
Time, so... And that's one of the great things about them. You know?
Yeah. I did see in the notes here that the guy that designed the album cover wanted his name removed from it because they used an unfinished version.
Huh.
So they were probably ready to go to press with it, and the guy was like, well, what you have is a rough draft.
What an idiot.
And they got a lot of shit for that, though. Like, I mean, I know a lot of fans hate that album cover.
So is this the Elder of Iron Maiden?
Yeah, what album is the Elder of the Iron Maiden catalog? The Blaze Bailey stuff, I guess, right?
Well, let's just talk about the Bruce Dickinson stuff. I would say it's either a tie between Dance of Death and, for some stupid reason, a lot of people don't like the next album, A Matter of Life and Death.
Comes out August 28th, 2006.
But I have reasons for this, and I think it's true.
Okay, well, what are your reasons?
They played the whole... Now, I loved
this
it.
This is the one they did
I loved it, because I love this album.
Right.
But I know a lot of fans, because Maiden doesn't tour in America a lot.
Yeah.
And they toured in America for this, and a lot of fans were pissed off because they played the whole fucking album.
Didn't they come back?
And they didn't get to hear all their fucking hits.
But didn't they do like a hit set encore at the end?
Yeah, but not all their hits. This album's probably freaking 90 minutes long.
So then
75
people
minutes long?
That have been waiting a long, long time for the opportunity to see Maiden probably aren't
and again,
excited
fans
in 2006
because,
for this music. They want to hear all the songs. You're bringing somebody to Maiden because they never get a chance to see them.
Yeah.
And then you like say you bring your kid, you know, and I want you to see Iron Maiden. It's 2006,
and
you know,
like,
they
don't
they
know
never
songs.
Come around.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to love it. And then you get there and they're like, well, what's this? You know, what's that? And why didn't they play this? And why didn't they, you know, you kind of expect it out of them.
But it was because of that. And Maiden heard about the backlash from the fans that they did this tour, which was the Somewhere Back in Time tour, where they
It's like you want old stuff. Here
they did all the old
somewhere
stuff.
Back in time.
So,
yeah.
So they learned from it, you know, and they gave the fans what they wanted.
Yeah.
But I love the album. I think this is just a great album. I mean, some of it sounds old school. There's some long songs, but
I like
it flows
these colors
good.
Don't run it's sound just, like a classic song.
It's just, I mean, the album cover's cool with the tank and
with the
skeletons and stuff. I mean, it's freaking awesome. I don't understand the people's hate of this album, but I really think people that saw that show and didn't like them playing the whole album take it out on
it
the album.
Tainted their opinion. Of the
album. It does that. It taints their opinion
There's
of it.
There's a lot of stuff about
makes
war
sense.
On this album.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. This is just an awesome album. Right. I mean, you know, straight out of World War II. I mean,
right.
Yeah. Some good stuff on here. Okay. I like the Pilgrim.
Yeah.
The Pilgrim. But yeah, I mean, so you saw that show.
Yeah.
And so you were happy with
it. It was
that.
Awesome.
Yeah. But you were into the album.
I mean, if they had played the whole X Factor album, I would have said it sucked. But
yeah.
I loved the album before that.
I guess, a couple of years ago, my wife and I went and saw Rush, and they played almost the entire Clockwork Angels album.
But the thing with this, though, is if like Aaron's saying, if somebody had brought somebody who had never seen Maiden to it, but they didn't have that album, I could see how it would have been like, they'd been like, well, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's like a listening party.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, but, what is this? Yeah, I got you. All right, so do we want to go to 2010 now?
Yep.
All right, The Final Frontier. And until this week, this was the newest album.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, all right, what do we think of this one?
Good album.
I think so, too. I liked it when it came out.
I think it's kind of back to form.
Yeah?
You know? I think this one, I think between Matter of Life and Death and this one, they got back to the formula that made Iron Maiden so great in the first place.
I think so, too. This one definitely has a callback to a more of a classic sound, you know, like kind of like you said with Final Frontier, where they purposely said, you know, let's you know, go back to what makes us Maiden, you know. And like you said, maybe that had a little bit to do with the backlash of what they got on that tour to say, okay, well, maybe the people don't like this new direction we're kind of going in. Let's do something that we know they're going to love, something that maybe if we did play a lot of these songs in concert, they probably wouldn't mind too much. And again, these are a lot of, look at the length
long
of the
songs.
Yeah.
There's no radio hits on this album.
No, and they're not going for it. But what they're going for is a good classic Maiden sound, and I think they nailed it with this one.
Yep.
Yeah, 10 full tracks.
I don't really know anybody that doesn't like this album.
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, an early Maiden fan, you know, the Paul Di'Anno era and stuff like
right.
that. But if you stuck with them at least through Fear of the Dark, mm-hmm. all through the 80s and stuff, I don't know anybody that doesn't like this album.
Was this one a big deal when it came out? I don't even remember.
This was huge when it came out.
Yeah.
They leaked, it came out online, however you want to say it, but El Dorado was the first single.
Yeah.
The video was freaking awesome. You know, they put it out, and then Satellite 15, The Final Frontier, came out, and Satellite 15 is the acoustic intro part, and there was the cool video that had all this cool stuff to it, and I think it was a big deal when it came out, you know.
And this is too,
people are just glad that Maiden's still around.
Right.
And this is where they went back to the classic studios in the Bahamas, too, and went back and said it had the same kind of creepy, spooky feel as when they were recording that classic stuff back in the 80s.
I believe they worked on this for like 2 years. It was a long album.
So that tells me, if they're going as far as going back to that same classic studio, that tells me that for sure this was intended to be a classic Maiden-sounding album.
This
which,
is what happened with Maiden with
Bullseye.
Brave New World came out, and they kind of started over. They kind of had to start rebuilding their legacy.
Right.
And, you know, to me, it seems like A Matter of Life and Death got them kind of almost back to the top.
Right.
And this one kind of got them to that step. And then, like you said, Book of Souls is coming out, and we got to see how that is.
So,
it is going to be the longest Maiden album ever.
Yeah,
they got the
92
longest
92 minutes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, 92 minutes.
What's the longest song on it?
On
like
this one?
18 minutes, 17 minutes?
It's 18 minutes. It's the final track called Empire of the Clouds.
Longer than
Holy
the Rhyme
shit.
Of the Ancient Mariner.
Written by Bruce alone.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well,
that
ought to
be a score fest.
So
you never know.
It's going to have a lot of acoustic guitar in it.
And then there's a song called, the title track is written by Yannick and Steve, and it's 10 minutes. And then there's a song called The Red and the Black, and that's 13 minutes.
And from everything I've seen, they've been talking about this album for a good 3 months,
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are anticipating this album.
I'm excited.
Well, we've heard this first single, Speed of Light.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
We all in agreement that it's a good song.
Yeah, it's good. I like it a lot.
Adrian Smith and Bruce wrote that song.
Yeah.
So I
could tell because it has a lot of Adrian guitar in it. He's the kind of noodler guitar guy in the band.
Yeah, so.
And that video is even pretty awesome, especially if you're a video game fan.
And I've heard people say the video's stupid.
Yeah, it is kind of stupid, but it's
I don't ever
really cool
take
way.
Away from a song, though, because of a bad video.
No,
I don't understand that.
Uh-uh.
The video
either.
Has nothing to do with the song.
And videos have less to do with music nowadays.
Yeah, that video
ever.
Is killer. Right.
Yeah, I like it.
But they like the flying Eddie head reminds me of the Lawnmower Man. And then the video game parts, it's like it starts off with like Donkey Kong.
Right.
And then it goes to Mortal Kombat.
It's awesome.
I think it had like Double Dragon.
Double
in there.
Dragon,
yeah.
Mortal Kombat, and then like first-person shooter stuff like Duke Nukem.
It went through the whole evolution of video games, just like Iron Maiden has gone through the whole evolution of metal.
Yeah, because Iron Maiden history and video game history kind of run concurrent like that. Very cool. Boy, we are uncovering some shit here today, huh? bet you guys listening never even thought of that.
I hope they didn't pay a lot for that video, because I could have come up with that.
Oh, come on.
It was cool, though.
That's a cool concept, though.
Yeah, at least they put some work into
it. The thing about Maiden is they always take chances, and I hate bands that are afraid to take chances.
Yeah, they don't play it safe.
And it seems like if you discount the Blaze years, which I don't blame that on Maiden. I mean, they didn't have a choice. What
they had to earn a living.
The thing about bands like that, though, is even if they put out a bad album, at least they put something out, and you at least still know they're around.
Yeah.
You know,
but
and there's always still a chance.
With these really long songs that are listed on this, does this make you wary about what you're going to hear?
It does. It does, but
maybe a little too experimental.
Maybe, but we'll just have to see.
Are we going
to
get their version of Nostradamus?
Mm. Oh, man.
No, I believe I read somewhere that Bruce had heard Nostradamus and he wasn't a fan of it.
Okay. Well, maybe then they're in good hands then.
So,
I don't know. But
I don't think Bruce is that. Bruce is the kind of guy that if he wants to do something like that, he has the means, and Steve Harris would probably let him.
Right.
He would let him do it on his own.
I suppose he's like, no, not Maiden, but you go ahead and you know, do a
little Steve Harris
project.
Put out the British Lions album a couple years ago.
No, I didn't like
you know,
that.
They had plenty of time to for Bruce to do something else. So
I was not impressed with that album. But I mean,
I think at this point all the members of Iron Maiden respect what Iron Maiden is.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want to do something too weird, you do it outside.
Yeah,
they
seem pretty protective of their legacy. I don't think they're gonna go too
I mean, what about Adrian Smith's? He put out that he put out a solo album a few years ago. I can't remember what it was called, but
I don't even remember that.
No, you don't need to. You don't need to. It was bad.
Do your weird stuff outside of the.
But that's the thing. At least Steve Harris says, "Okay, y'all go do that."
Yeah.
Because it's crap, and I don't want it on a Maiden album.
Right.
So they get that out of their system, and then they come back and
then focus.
He makes them focus and do the good stuff for Maiden.
Right. That's good. Well,
that's a good thing.
So you think that basically them and Judas Priest are kind of the hallmarks of?
I would say that. I would say that. Like. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Ian Wadley says, you know, Black Sabbath invented it, but Judas Priest perfected it. And I believe that it was Judas Priest and Iron Maiden that perfected it.
Right.
You know, they both took it to the next. And I really believe that in the early 80s, I mean, at one point, Maiden might have been surpassed Priest, and that probably made Priest step their game up a little bit.
Yeah, so they put Turbo out.
You know?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I just. And I'm going to have to listen to more because I've had a crazy week. But I mean, it piqued my interest enough to listen more to the catalog. And there's more there than, you know, what my initial thoughts were.
Good.
You know, well, you'll hear certain, you know, I mean, it's not everything I've heard I've liked, but I never really just delved into it. So I'm going to listen to the catalog.
I know it's hard because it's a lot to go through.
Well, it's just
a lot there.
A lot of it is getting into the historical lyric stuff. I'm a simple guy.
He wants groupies.
I want to hear
like
about
talk dirty to me.
Yeah,
you don't want to hear Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
You're right. I do.
There's a place for
but
both.
There's a place for all of it, you know. But maybe now that I'm older and more mature, I can get into it more, you know. But but overall, Billy, I mean, how do you? I mean, so Iron Maiden's still up at the top of your
Maiden
list.
Maiden is. I mean, them and Priest are a. You know, tomorrow I might say Priest if I'm in a Priest mood, but I mean. More 9 times out of 10, I would say Maiden is the not just my favorite, but the best metal band on the planet.
And
I'm talking metal. I'm not talking thrash metal. I'm not talking, you know, there's no way in the world that I would lump Metallica in with Maiden because they're not nowhere as good as Maiden.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
It's different. different. Oranges and apples.
Yeah.
Oranges and apples.
They don't fall in the same grouping.
They splintered the tree of metal for a reason, because it can't all go together.
And I have to bring this up. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you think it's going to happen?
No.
No? Ever?
They're British. They don't give a fuck about that. No.
That's one band that's absolutely deserving.
They don't care, dude.
Yeah, it's just, but I mean, for their place in history, man. No. Come on. How can you, how would you?
But they're so fucking stupid. You know, it's the same old debate of,
they don't need it.
You know, stupid people that don't know any better haven't put Iron Maiden in the Hall of Fame yet. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah, well, it ain't ridiculous because they're stupid ass people that don't know no better.
It's a clique of people and they don't like that kind of music.
Right. I honestly think that Bruce respects Deep Purple enough.
Yeah. They at least,
because he knows where they came from.
Yeah.
And if anybody was ever to do it, yeah, it would be him that would say, no, I'm not going in until Deep Purple does.
Right.
That would be cool if it happened.
That is, if
and Deep Purple never will. We could get into that discussion, but Deep Purple will never be in the Hall of Fame.
I think if you, you know, listen to the Decibel Geek podcast and you're like-minded like us, and if you take that Hall of Fame thing even tiny bit seriously, the biggest travesty in the whole entire freaking world is that Deep Purple's not in it. Well, I mean, Deep Purple,
so much
the day they opened the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Deep Purple should have been there.
Yeah. They were like the Babe Ruth that should have been automatically
you know
in.
And as long as we've bitched and waited and complained, and finally Kiss goes in, and as big a Kiss fan as I am, damn, you know, Deep Purple should have been in way before Kiss.
But they fucked Kiss over, though. Yeah. It was such a big fucking debacle. So it's all about selling merchandise.
And now that the whole thing's over, nobody talks about it anymore.
No.
Nobody cares.
That tells you how really insignificant it was.
Right.
It turned into a fucking... Well, that's a whole...
I think they just nominated Kiss finally because they knew they were going to get a bunch of press because
of
it.
Right.
Bad or good, it doesn't matter.
Let's hold off on the Kiss talk and we'll get you for some VIP stuff. But for Iron Maiden, I think... You know, as I say, I'm not an expert, so I didn't provide much today, but Billy and Aaron certainly did, because you guys know your stuff.
Absolutely one of the greatest rock bands to ever grace us with
their... I'm glad they're still around, and if they ever come around, because they don't come here a lot. That's when I saw them 2 years ago when they were doing that Maiden England tour, they were only doing 7 dates across the states, and luckily Nashville was one of them, and I just basically told my wife, there's no way in hell I'm going to miss this show.
Right.
Awesome. That's just something that you don't want to do.
So, if you want to bone up on your Iron Maiden collection, go to decibelgeek.com, click on that Amazon link.
Yep.
I got to sell. But, Billy, it's been fun having you on. It's been a long time coming, and I'll get your $100 on the way out.
Okay.
All right, so. All right.
So, for this, you owe me, we're going to do a Trickster track by track.
No.
You promised.
And on that note, we'll see you guys next week.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.